Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Interstate of Music podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Peterson, and I have a guest today on the podcast that, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. She's a vocal coach by career, and there's a journey and a path to get to that portion of what she is doing and who she is and all the rest of it. And we're going to find out a lot more, you know, but when I saw vocal coach, I immediately went to, I wonder if she could make me be able to sing Jessie's Girl just good enough so people don't say don't ever do karaoke again. So I want to bring on our guest, Delisa Archer. Welcome to the Interstate Music Podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you have no idea. You have no idea what you're in for. You just don't. I have zero thoughts that I can sing in any way, shape, or form. So when I saw that you were coming on in a vocal coach, I immediately went, oh my gosh, I'm going to try to be so nice to her that she pities me enough to say, Jeff, let's do some Zoom vocal coaching just to get you past that like terrible stage. So that's my end goal here, is that you end up liking me enough to give me like a free Zoom vocal lesson. That's the end goal. Let the whole world know it.
Thank you for being honest.
So Delisa, here's the big question. I want to get back to kind of when music started to kind of enter into your world, to the point of you all of a sudden thinking you could teach others how to do something. And I bring this up not in vocal coaching, but just any type of coaching, any type of mentoring, any type of higher level teaching. And it's not just being a vocal coach. It's at some point you've learned a craft or had a lot of experience in something to put you in a position where you think you can share your skills and help elevate somebody else's. Where were you to get to the point? What was the journey that gave you those experiences?
Well, thank you for asking that. That's a different question. I actually have always loved teaching for as long as I can remember. I'm the baby of three, but I have a younger cousin who's 4 years younger than me. And so I loved teaching her how to read. So from a very young age, from elementary school, I just had a love for books. I had a love for learning. And I always said I wanted to be an English teacher because I love teaching literacy in general. And then the other passion that I had was learning, like I said, language. So I minored in Spanish. But I studied Spanish on my own since elementary school. I would just go to the library and take books out in Spanish and teach myself Spanish. And that was just another love that I had. So I always said I would either teach Spanish or English.
Okay, hold on really quick. You talk about learning Spanish. You don't have to answer. Oh man, I'm going to call you out a little bit, but maybe I'm not calling you out. Maybe I'm like elevating you, but I don't know, but I'm going to ask this question because I took 4 years of Spanish in high school. And I'm like, me llamo jefe, like, donde es el baño? I took 4 years of Spanish, and I've got nothing. I have nothing. And so when you talk about, like, kind of wanting to learn that language and kind of immerse yourself a little bit in trying to do that, did that carry on? Like, can you speak some Spanish now, or are you kind of me llamo Delisa?
I'm better than me llamo Delisa, pero no he hablado en muchos años.
Oh, yeah, okay, all right, yeah, you're good. Yeah, you don't have, you're totally fine. Yeah, you're going to the all-inclusive and being able to have like a random conversation with the bartender, which is fine. It was just a side thing I was wondering because I'm terrible at that stuff. I'm not the greatest of like in-depth learning. I'm kind of that surface kind of learner, you know, and I don't even know if I said that right. Man, Peterson, calling yourself out on your own podcast. No bueno. Hey, how about that? So when did the music portion come in?
I was 2 years old and singing Whitney Houston, Saving All My Love, from the reports I've heard. And at 4 years old, I was singing in church. My grandfather would put my sister and I, who's 3 years older than us, he would put us up in church. And then I was the one who would always sing when the cafeteria was too loud at school. They would just have me sing for the cafeteria to get it quiet.
Seriously.
And then my my grandfather had a country gospel group, which is interesting because we're Jamaican. But he had a country gospel group, and we, my sister and I, were the stars. And so I was 8 years old traveling with my grandfather singing solos, and people would be like, "Bring her back." And I would come back to the stage, and they would put money on the stage while I was singing.
So, hold on. I need kind of a definition of what, you know, I hear about gospel singers, and I hear about like kind of singers starting in church. Country gospel. I don't get that part. Where is that? I've never heard that before. Is that still a thing, or is that just what he created?
Well, the thing is, gospel kind of doesn't really define the sound, right? Gospel is the content, the lyrics.
Yeah, so. You're right. That makes sense.
Country gospel. You're now defining the sound. So it's like Jesus is coming.
All right.
Yeah. You know.
I love that. Country gospel. I think I would actually listen to country gospel. I love country music, so I'm like, man, throw it in. I love it. So how much do you think that just being part of that group of listeners, you know, as the singer to that group of listeners and the way they actually paid attention or got involved with what you were doing, how much did that have something to do with energizing you to that next level?
With what group of listeners?
Like when you were in front of the people doing the country gospel and you had the people that were there to watch, what type of energy made you keep wanting to do it and go to that next level?
There was a man on the front row one time that was weeping while I was singing. And I think that was a moment that I was like, wow, my singing actually affects people. I think that's kind of what made me think, you know, I think singing is something I always knew I would do professionally. I didn't really know how it would turn into dollars necessarily.
Sure.
Because I knew that I didn't want to be a pop star necessarily. I always kind of wanted to have ownership of my personhood and of my image and of my brand. And so I always knew that I didn't want to be told who I was, especially this is like 90s and 2000s when the machine was really working artists. I knew I didn't want to be part of that machine, but I knew I wanted to be great at what I did.
That is a fantastic answer, and I'm glad I asked the question because sometimes it brings you back to moments you haven't thought of for a while, especially when it comes to the audience, because I think especially when it comes to the arts, you know, there's so much impact that a person on stage or performing or preaching or teaching, it's so much about the impact that they get back personally that keeps them energized to keep going. And it's amazing where music can actually touch people in so many different ways. And it's not always, I mean, let's face it, it's not always positive. Sometimes it can, you know, it can be a negative influence, but yet anything that can be an influence is something that, you know, is impactful. So when you started to go down the journey of saying, I knew I was going to do this professionally, I was going to sing professionally to some capacity, when did you start to actually, you know, turn it into something that was consistent? And what were you doing that was paying the bills, so to speak?
So my very first BGB gig, background vocalist gig, I was 16 years old. And a friend came to me and said, we know somebody who needs a soprano tomorrow. She has 5 songs. Can you learn them? And that started my journey of professional singing. From there, she was touring and I would go wherever she was going. And then when she would record, I was recording with her, and all of this was still happening in high school. So I decided to study voice in college. I honestly thought I was stuck between Spanish business, Spanish education, or music. And I chose music because I honestly thought it would be the easiest route, which I found out that was not the case. Yep. But yeah, I think, does that answer your question?
It does. It does. It's one of those things where, you know, and it kind of explains a little bit about the vocal coach side of things, because when you go to school for it, you're a student of it. So then you start to learn how to learn it, which is part of then with your drive to help others and teach others, kind of even back when you were teaching reading to your niece or your cousin or somebody. I think that starts to play into it. So when you finished up school, what did you start to do? I mean, did you go and tour again, or did you launch your own career?
But what had happened was, while I was still in school, I got married, I had two kids, and then I was a stay-at-home mom, and I could no longer sing. First of all, the marriage is now dissolved, so that went poorly. But I realized very early in the marriage that it was going poorly, and I felt very stuck. And so what I did was I bought a laptop, and I started talking about singing on YouTube because I was now a stay-at-home mom that could no longer sing.
Unbelievable.
And I had just started back. It took me like 10 years to get my undergrad. And so we switched states. I had two kids and now I was bored and I thought my life was over. Let me at least talk about singing to keep it in my life. And so I went online and I just started talking from my pedagogy notes about how to get vibrato. And people were like, that was the most, you know, that was the best explanation I've ever seen on YouTube. And I was like, oh, they liked it. So then I did. Back then I was doing 10 minute videos, you know what I mean? On like all of these things. I was giving sermonettes, you know?
Sure. And so did you ever start to do any of those YouTube videos where you actually started singing, or did that kind of re-energize you? Did you start writing your own music ever? Like, where did you start to try to fit yourself in as a vocalist?
Yeah. So that was interesting because then it became, what would happen is I would talk about, let's say, mixed voice. And then I would say like Chaka Khan, and then I would sing something by Chaka Khan. And people were like, whoa, you can actually really sing.
Yep.
You're the best singing vocal coach we've ever heard. And I was like, in my mind, I'm thinking that's because I'm a singer, you know? And so that's actually what I was going to say before we started. I think what sets me apart from other vocal coaches is I'm a singer first.
Yep.
You know, I actually am a real performer. I have a great voice. Like I can honestly say, I think I have a great voice. I have a beautiful voice. It's a beautiful tone. I'm not just somebody who studied the mechanics of singing because I love the mechanics. I studied the mechanics of singing because I went to school for classical voice and I learned the mechanics of singing. And then I learned how to integrate that into my gospel and R&B singing. And that process of what can I take from classical music and put into R&B and gospel in a way that's healthy, that's what kind of got my wheels turning. And that's what helped me kind of form the methodology that I teach today.
Delisa, you're so appropriately confident in yourself and what you do. And I think a lot of people would be so shy about saying, I've got a great voice. I have a beautiful voice. I actually love the fact that you said that because I think there's an aspect in our lives about whatever it is we do, that it is okay to think you're really good at something. And it's okay to tell somebody else that you feel that you're good at what it is you're doing or an aspect of what you do. And I think so much when it comes to, you know, you see all these voice contests, you know, on TV and all this kind of thing. And as a viewer, you go, who told them they were good? You know, like, so it's like, but then some others that are unbelievably good, you look at them and they're like so shy about their skills and what they're capable of. And you see where confidence starts to be an important factor of your progression, whether it's your overconfidence, so you don't take the time to care about learning and mastering the craft, or you're completely underconfident where you don't think that you're good enough to move forward, so you don't push or put yourself in those situations. Where do you, as a vocal coach or just a singer, you know, communicating and hanging with other singers, where do you find your confidence helping or hindering, in some cases, who you communicate with?
That's a good question. I don't think my confidence has ever hindered me because I know that I'm really good at what I do on both ends. I think I have a great level of confidence. I'm very self-aware. So I know that I know a lot. I have a master's degree of voice. So I know a lot, but I also have professional boundaries. Even though I know a lot, that doesn't mean I'm going to go out and tell people I'm a vocal therapist because I don't have a master's degree in speech pathology. You know what I'm saying? And there's some people with the knowledge that I have that will call themselves a vocal therapist. I know when I'm in the presence of a singer that's better than me, I will tell them that myself, like, girl, you out-sing me. No, I'm not going to sing with you. No, ma'am. You got that all by yourself. So I'm really aware of my strengths and my weaknesses and where I I fit.
So important. There's so many things that you're just checking these boxes in my head, because I'm in business. And so much of what I've done and what I've spoken about, even in front of people and at conferences, is about self-assessment and self-awareness and knowing the strengths and weaknesses and being confident enough to go out there and focus on your weaknesses to see if you can turn them into not necessarily a strength, but something that is good enough to help you get to the next level. So as a vocal coach, did you kind of give up your own singing career to focus on coaching, or were you able to kind of do it in tandem?
I can't say that I did it in tandem. My oldest two are now 15 and 16 years old. So this whole journey has, you gotta remember, when I was making YouTube videos, they were toddlers. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think what has happened is as they've gotten older, I've been able to get back more to the music. I think the vocal coaching just happened to be what worked well at the time, because vocal coaching allowed me to be home with my children.
And
you know what I'm saying? Once I branded myself as a vocal coach, I was kind of kicking myself, because people just thought, you're a great singing vocal coach, as opposed to, I want to book you to sing. I got far less. And what's happened over the last 12, 13 years is that my value as a vocal coach is so much higher than my value as an artist or a singer. And so that is kind of what I also have to weigh out when I decide. So right now, even though I put out music and I do, I even do covers and all of that, I see singing now as a very expensive hobby. The only thing it does, the only way for me not to think of it as an expensive hobby is when I put those things out, people go, oh my gosh, your voice is so amazing. I want to be coached by you.
There is an aspect of integrity building and proof in the pudding, so to speak, of keeping your craft alive, where, you know, I'll sit here and, you know, often, you know, I'm like, okay, what am I going to do when my business career is over? Let me just say, like, I age out to a degree of my energy and I want to go into consulting.
Yeah.
There is a point when you start to consult, when you're out of the day to day, where I think to myself, 3 years out of it, with as fast as things change, how relevant am I going to be 3 years out of retirement to be consulting? And so I try to think to myself, what does that even look like for a business person? So when you're talking about, you know, staying on top of your craft and singing because you enjoy it, it's a passion of yours, it makes you probably smile and happy, but also, it's kind of that resume builder and, you know, maintaining your resume for your career as a vocal coach.
You know, it took a friend of mine to kind of just say, Delisa, you just need to accept that your voice is your resume, like you said, and your voice is your resume to get people to book you for coaching. People are still not going to say, you sounded so amazing, I want to book you for a show. People say, oh, when are you putting on a show? I would love to come.
Right.
But, you know, it's just the vocal coaching has just become its own entity, and everyone's going to just kind of filter everything through that.
So when you're doing vocal coaching, is there a radius circling where you live that is as far as you can reach for vocal coaching? Or is it a situation where people will fly in, or you'll fly out, or is this Zoom thing, the quality is like, okay, can you coach somebody through Zoom? So how do you do it? What's your radius of, like, you know, talent pool that you can coach? Is that a thing when it comes to vocal coaching?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about me and my particular business is I have had very little clients in Atlanta. My clients have always been worldwide from day one. When I started posting on YouTube back in 2009, my very first client inquiry came from Sweden. And I told her no. I rejected people for 6 months. I was like, there's no way you can teach on Skype. That's ridiculous.
Right.
But I finally decided to try it. And once I did, I was like, they learned something. They felt happy with that. So that's what made me continue to do it. And my business has been probably 95% online using Skype. This was before Zoom was even thought of, chat. you know, using Skype and all of that stuff from day one. People also have, I've had clients fly in from Japan, UK, other European countries, and I have been flown out as well.
So if I wanted to have you coach me, and I'm like, I don't really want to do the Zoom, you know, teaching, you know, learning type of a thing. I want to have it be more one-on-one. If I flew to Atlanta, okay, how do I learn in a period of time that I'm there? And how does that work? How many times do I have to fly back and forth in the course of a year? Like, what does it feel like? What does it look like if I'm wanting to bring you on and hire you and have you help? What does the progression look like, the amount of time spent? Obviously, you know, I'm terrible, so it's going to take a whole hell of a lot of time. But like, what is, just give people that are listening that have never thought about hiring a vocal coach, like, what does that feel like as far as depending on the level they're at and this and that? So hit me.
Right. It depends on the level you're at. And we have to make really, really clear goals. Most people aren't going to just fly in and out for regular voice lessons. It would probably be, let's meet on Zoom for our regular lessons. And then when you have a project, you can come to me. And then usually when people fly in, it's like, I'm going to meet with you every day for 2 hours for the next month, because we have, or like they have a recording that they're doing, or they're preparing for tour or something like that. So it has to be project. It needs to be project based for it to make sense. I had somebody flying from Slovenia, and it was because she had, you know, lost her voice and wanted to rebuild certain things. Or I was flown out to Portugal for the same thing. So usually it has to be, I'm working on something really specific.
So with your, yeah, it does. With your kids getting older, it obviously starts to get a little bit easier for you to fly out for some of those individual projects, which is really cool. I'm still like, how do you get your word out? Is it all word of mouth? Is it like, how do you get people to know you exist and you do what you do? What's been your biggest trick to getting people to find you?
I'm going to be honest. I was on YouTube before I knew it was social media.
I get that. I was there. I wasn't on YouTube, but I didn't look at YouTube as social media. That is so funny you say it that way, because I'm sitting here going, yeah, seriously, it's like, I just thought, oh, videos, you know, it's like, oh, that's not social media, because I'm not going back and forth with these videos, you know? So it's like, it didn't feel that way, but you're right. I love that.
Yeah. So YouTube has been my biggest to this day. Like, I stopped making videos regularly at least 6-7 years ago. And I still get brand new clients who say, I saw your video analysis on Brandy, and that's why I want to book you, because I have a similar voice to Brandy. And what that watching that video showed me, blah, 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 showed me that you'd be able to teach me. So now I want to book you. So honestly, YouTube has been the best investment of time that I ever made that I didn't know I needed to make. And then I, you know, from there, I just kind of actually learned how to use social media and started using it more intentionally. Facebook and Instagram. And now I'm on TikTok trying to make videos. Child, I'm old. TikTok is a whole new thing. So yeah,
it really is. And trying to find your voice, not to be kind of like, you know, tapping into the conversation, whatever, but trying to figure out how different your reach is, your demographic is on TikTok versus Facebook versus Insta versus YouTube. It's very challenging. And if you're running is this a sole proprietorship? Is it just you kind of doing this for yourself?
I have an executive assistant.
Okay.
Who helps me, but essentially, yes, it's a corporation, but sure. Yeah, I'm doing everything, and I do get burnt out. And yeah. So I have hired somebody. And so we work very closely together now, because I actually now have a skincare line.
Okay. Let's not even pause. Let's get right into it. What? Like, it's just random out of the blue. You're like, man, if I can teach somebody how to sing a little bit better, I've got to be able to, you know, get a pimple off the face. What's up with the skincare line? And when did you start this?
I haven't mastered the face yet. So it's not for the face, but basically,
start with elbows? What?
Yes, exactly. The neck and below, and then the hair. So I have always had very dry skin, and I've always been very particular about what lotions I use. My mother used like a mix of Vaseline and Jergens, and I'm just like, this is not working. So I have been experimenting. I remember at one point I used to put olive oil all over my body. Like, this is way better than lotion. So over the years, I have figured out.
I mean, you must have been just slipping and sliding everywhere. I mean, how did you even get, like, once you put olive oil on, how did you even stand? Like, you did not have, like, tile or wood floors. You must have had carpet because that first step's a doozy.
Olive oil everywhere. I used to be like, this is the best. I don't know how you guys use lotion. So over the last several years, I just started making my own lotions. And it was a mix of whipped shea butter, coconut oil, olive oil, jojoba oil. And then I would start experimenting with different scents. So I've been doing it for myself and my children for the last year and a half, like actually whipping it up and mixing it. And I was just like, you know, I should sell this. So I decided to actually create a business called Iona Naturals. Iona is my middle name. We're launching a bunch of signature scents. We even have a Valentine scent. Oh, it's nice. Because I love smelling good too. Smells are like a thing for me.
Yeah,
so.
Fragrance makes, I mean, that aroma aspect of life, period, is such a thing. It's almost like music. Like you hear a song, all of a sudden it can change your mood. Same thing with the fragrances are the same thing. I love that you're kind of tying so much of that into it. And how many different categories of, is it just a single lotion that you're on right now?
I actually have six scents. The one that's on my website right now is the peppermint lavender. Oh my gosh, smells amazing. I have a sandalwood one, like a sandalwood based one. Okay. I think it's like sandalwood patchouli, and it's definitely a guy scent, and it's called Hot Stuff because I think it makes the guy smell like hot stuff.
Well, I'm telling you what, I clearly need a 5-gallon bucket of hot stuff. Because this olive oil treatment that I've been doing is just not doing, it's not working, you know? I have more people that are trying to just come up with a loaf of bread and just rub it on my arm to see if, you know, it's so bad. It's just bad. So how do people find it, and what's your production? I mean, are you able to, do you have a company that's producing it for you and bottling it, labeling it and all that kind of stuff? Or is this in, you know, the Iona kitchen?
This is definitely in my Iona kitchen for right now. And who knows when I'll ever get to the point where someone else is doing it. But
do you have a bottle of it? Do you have a bottle of it somewhere, like close to you?
Yeah, I don't. My labels aren't here yet, but I do have a bottle. You would have to give me like 30 seconds to get it.
Go. The beauty of being able to edit this little 30 second. It's gonna feel so wonderful. We're not live.
We can. Live.
We're not, but I mean, you can feel that way. Go get the bottle. Go. As we patiently wait for Delisa to come back with this bottle of lotion, that isn't going to have a label, but maybe we'll be able to get kind of the artwork and kind of pop it up on this podcast. But I do love that chair. That's got to be one of the most comfortable chairs I've ever seen. And she's back, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are live. We're not live. I'm totally kidding. But you don't know for sure. So, you know, it's fun to play. So that's it, huh?
Yeah. So this is 10 ounces of the peppermint lavender. And I do have labels already created. Like I said, they should be here today. Lovely. Feels like heaven.
I like the consistency side. Look at that.
Yeah.
How long is that 10 ounces going to last? A long time.
At least 2 to 3 months. At least a couple of months.
And what are you gonna retail it for?
$21.
Yeah, deal. Deal. For 2-3 months worth of lotion that works? Deal, girl. I love it. I absolutely love it because what I love about the time that you put into it, you know what your challenge was as far as dry skin. You knew what you were doing before and what level that worked. And then all of a sudden you create your own combination And by creating your own combination, you realize what it feels like, what it smells like, and all the rest of it. I love that you're doing it. Do you, how many people have you made this for and like had try it?
So far, like maybe about 10 people, like anyone that has come around, I'm like, oh yeah, I make my own lotion. And then they're like, what? This is excellent. You know?
Right. So, and so it,
I live so far away from my family. Like my family lives in South Florida and I live in Atlanta. So it's kind of hard to get people over.
So when you said, I heard you say Jamaica, what's up with that?
Okay. Yeah. So I don't know if you ever heard of the Windrush generation, but there was a generation of Jamaicans in the 50s that moved to England. England at the time was a British colony. And so my parents were born in England, even though their parents are Jamaican. And then I was born in England as well. So we're all from Manchester, England. And then in 1987, my grandmother decided to get green cards for the entire family and move us all to Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
So did you ever have an English accent?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Can you actually, is that something like you can just like flip a switch and you're back to it? Like, can you bring me a little bit of English accent?
I'm not as good as it as I used. I'm not as good at it as I used to be, but it's there a little bit.
Oh, I love it. I love that. It's like, if you go back to England, do you ever go back?
Yes.
And does it take like just like a couple days and all of a sudden you've got an accent back?
Well, I think living in Georgia has really hurt my accent when I was around my family all the time, because all my aunts and uncles still have their accent and all their friends still have their accent. So it was a lot easier when I lived in Fort Lauderdale. Living in Georgia has softened it. And so when I go back, I think I have an accent, but my cousins laugh at me.
I think you've got such an interesting, diverse background and upbringing and journey that has gotten you to where you are. And I can see there's such an aspect of drive and passion in what you do. And you went through a time in your life, like so many of us, that you just felt challenged and felt like things were going the wrong way and wrong direction, but you made a decision to get past it and not allow it to define you. And you opened up and you shared yourself to the world and it turned into who you are today. And I'm going to tell you, Delisa, you're pretty amazing. And I saved my editor from having to bleep that out. I've really enjoyed getting to know you and hearing about everything. And I'm, you know, some of the questions I asked were probably a little random, but I didn't know anything about you coming into this. And I feel like I know so much and I know enough to know that I want to keep getting to know you. So thank you so much for being part of the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun. Thank you.
It was fun and it wasn't live, but it's going to feel live to everybody that watches it. And I can't wait to hear more about your lotion journey and your vocal coaching. And I want to hear some of your own stuff. I want to hear you put some of your own stuff out there. I want you to get back into the YouTube world and start posting some new stuff and sharing it and letting people get to know you even that much better. So thanks again for being part of the Interstate of Music podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Delisa Archer was part of the show. We love her. You love her. Follow her.
Thank you so much.
You bet.